just after midnight. 2025 has officially begun. And I'm starting to realize I've made a big mistake.
This is me. At the start of 2025.
I think I bit off more than I can chew, man.
And no, I'm not talking about my decision to do laps in basketball shoes. You see, there's a reason for my midnight run. I needed to clear my head. Because earlier that day, I made a big decision, basically on a whim.
You want to know something crazy? I've been a political content creator for 4 years, and I have hardly read any theory. Keep putting it off for some reason, but this time it's going to be different. I'm giving myself a deadline. I just got back from the used bookstore. We got a nice selection of books here. Altogether, it's about 1,000 pages. And just because I'm feeling ambitious, I'm going to read it all by the end of the month. I'm tired of being stupid, bro.
And just like that, the gauntlet was laid down. I had committed to reading more than I had in all of 2024 in just 30 days.
The rules are simple. I need to read all 1,000 pages by the end of the month and then create something to share what I've learned. Could be a video, could be an infographic, could be a poem. I actually have no idea what I'm going to create, but it should be cool.
If you average it out, that means I'll have to read about 33 pages per day. Now, that may sound easy, but as I quickly found, not all pages are created equal.
Not gonna lie, I cheated already. I read a couple pages just to see what I was in for. It's really dense. I don't know how I'm gonna do it, man. I'm gonna be traveling to New York and DC for like half the month. I picked a bad time to do this.
Oh yeah, and there's one thing I forgot to mention. Just to keep myself committed to this challenge, for every page I don't read, I will donate $1 to the Israeli Defense Force. They only got like $20 billion last year, so they need all the help they can get.
The challenge was set. Now I just needed to execute.
I'm officially cold. Time to go to bed. I'll figure it out tomorrow.
Okay, just checking in at the end of day one. Reading this much in one sitting is a bit challenging, I'm not gonna lie, especially when the material is not the easiest to digest. You kind of got to go over it again and again a couple times to understand it. I never thought the word hitherto would enter my vocabulary, but here we are. Yeah, I feel like I'm making good progress, making it work. I had the day off today, so that was nice. I got to spend a good amount of time reading, and I'm actually ahead of schedule right now, which is good because the next few days are going to be crazy. I have to do my day job while staying consistent in the gym and keeping it with my reading. And on top of that, I need to figure out how to get to DC because right now my plane is scheduled to take off in the middle of a massive snowstorm. So we'll see how that goes. Check back in a couple days.
It's 5 a.m. day four. I have to get to the airport.
To try and get ahead of the snowstorm, I had to reschedule my flight twice. Haggling with customer service had left me very little time to work on the challenge.
As far as reading goes, I've done basically nothing in the past 2 days.
And what's worse, I still wasn't sure I'd be able to avoid the blizzard. The radar was looking worse by the minute.
19 inches. That's a lot. Some would say too much.
Which is why I was up at the crack of dawn with basically zero sleep in my body, looking like a zombie.
I have a lot of ground to make up.
Nevertheless, I persisted. And after arriving at the airport,
thanks.
I settled in to get some reading done.
So, I'm going to Washington, the belly of the beast. But I have a secret weapon, metaphorically. Probably shouldn't say that word in an airport.
And soon, it was time to board. I was pretty nervous that we were going to be delayed, but thankfully the plane took off without incident, just in time to avoid one of the most colossal blizzards I've ever seen. Only a few hours later, I touched down in the center of the free world, Washington, D.C. I'd gotten through a good bit of marks on the plane, so I was feeling nice, but I wasn't about to rest on my laurels. I was ready to take it to the next level.
All right. So, we made it to DC. Why am I here, you might ask? Because Kamala Harris lost the election. and I don't plan to take this sitting down. Now, I don't pay much attention to the news, but I'd heard some pretty good things about this lady.
They think rents are too high, so they're going to have the government decide what the rent for your apartment should be. This is absolute socialism.
And if you're not happy with election results, there's only one place to go. Cue the montage. Here's the thing. If you want to change the world, you have to understand it first. That's why I decided to read theory in the first place. Thankfully, DC has a world-class reading facility. It's like a gym, but for your brain. They call it a library.
So I'm outside the Library of Congress, but I have a few minutes before my time slot begins, so I'm just going to walk around, see if we can get some cool pictures.
As luck would have it, the Library of Congress is conveniently located right across the street from regular Congress. And since I needed to make sure I knew what I was doing before I took over the federal government, I thought I'd pop in and read for a bit so I could get the whole politics thing figured out. But my hopes were soon dashed.
So that was a bust.
Turns out, the actual reading part of the library was closed to the public, so I was left to fend for myself among the hoi polloi in the atrium. The Library of Congress isn't much of a library at all. It's more like a highbrow tourist trap. Despite its elegance, this city feels oddly vacant. The lights are on, but nobody's home. These ornate buildings, which had at first impressed me, now seemed like the set of some movie. I recall the line from Marx. All fixed, fast, frozen relations are swept away. All new formed ones become antiquated before they can ossify. All that is solid melts into air. All that is holy is profaned. Either way, I wasn't getting any reading done, but the show had to go on.
So we're on to plan B.
I tried getting into the Capitol, but they must have been tipped off that I was coming. Security was impenetrable. And what's worse, the people around me seemed totally uninterested in joining in on my movement. It seemed that the revolutionary moment had passed me by. Or perhaps I was looking in the wrong place. Either way, I had suffered a devastating setback.
Man, these simple-minded sheeple don't understand what's at stake. There's about to be a dang Cheeto in the White House. I'm furious.
So I retreated to my quarters, did a bit of reading, and had a workout. But my heart wasn't in it.
Man, this stinks. I gotta get in there somehow.
Little did I know, my luck was about to change.
Good news. I think I may have just found a way to do Woke January 6th. It's gonna be beautiful.
As it turned out, I had arrived in D.C. at a very fortuitous time.
Today, the nation is mourning the loss of the 39th president, Jimmy Carter. President Joe Biden declaring next Thursday, January 9th, as a national day of mourning.
And here, some sort of high-level party official had passed away, and the undead king himself had decreed a national day of mourning, uploading his file to your brain now.
When we never see his like again, we'd all do well to try to be a little more like Jimmy Carter.
I have no idea who this man is, but that doesn't matter. The point is, he's coming here. And get this, they want us to come look at him.
Apparently, the Biden regime had organized some sort of state funeral and demanded that the public hold an all-night vigil in his honor.
Former President Jimmy Carter is now lying in state at the U.S. Capitol.
I thought that this sort of state-mandated display of affection only happened in authoritarian hellholes like North Korea and Disneyland. But I was happy to play the part if it meant getting access to the halls of power.
Happy birthday, it's Donald's birthday. Happy, happy birthday to you.
The plan is simple. We sneak into the Capitol to pay our respects. And once we're inside, we rally the masses and start doing socialism, I guess.
And since the event was already being streamed live, it would be a perfect opportunity to speak directly to the American people. You kind of need clout to pull off a revolution. But once we arrived downtown, I realized this wouldn't be a walk in the park. The line was long, and it was cold. Really cold. I couldn't believe the Biden regime was forcing all these people to stand out in the elements like this. All the while, I could feel the dark gravity of that marble temple drawing us in, inch by inch, line by line.
I'm in.
No, there's another line!
No, 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 bro.
It was getting late, but somehow we made it through. Security let me in. Big mistake. More lines, until finally, just after midnight, I stood in the rotunda and looked upon a president. The mood was impossible to describe. On one hand, the Capitol building is the ultimate symbol of the American state. On the other hand, I was starting to think that symbols were all that this town, this government, had to offer. I had come to D.C. believing that it was the seat of power. I had come here looking for revolution. But in that moment, revolution was the furthest thing from my mind. Standing in that silent, beautiful hall among a dazed, frostbitten crowd, I could only wonder whether these soldiers were humans of flesh and blood, or whether they were merely more frozen statues in this hall of statues. I could only wonder whether this vast machine I found myself at the center of had anyone at the helm, or whether we, like Carter, were trapped under the weight of that flag. Behind the culture war curtain, it was hard to believe that this building was anything but a vessel. A vessel for what? I didn't know. But as I left that hollow place, I knew one thing for certain. Whatever I was looking for, it wasn't here. But I didn't have much time to think about that. I had a train to catch. It's yours, it's yours. Whose world is this? The world is yours. The world is yours. I don't have anything to say about New York that hasn't already been said. Whatever energy I had expected to find in the Capitol was here. I could feel it, even if I couldn't put a name to it. I was back on the hunt.
So, I have a plan. I've heard whispers of this place where the authorities are keeping a bunch of old world relics. And we're going to try and bust in there. Here, see for yourself. They left one of their spy satellites unguarded. Yes, this is a real location. It is in Manhattan, New York, New York, somehow. And we are getting in there.
I had a hunch that these artifacts from the past might hold the key to understanding the future and solving the problem of politics. But getting access to them wouldn't be easy. The place was heavily fortified. I knew from experience that force didn't work. We needed to take a stealthy approach. After all, the Biden regime has eyes and ears everywhere. So we braved the forest path. It was icy and treacherous, but we made it to the stronghold undetected. Once inside, we were stopped at a checkpoint. Thankfully, I kept my cool and posed as a normal citizen. It had taken every ounce of riz I had, but I was in. I had overcome the two largest hurdles for internet leftists, physical exercise and social interaction. And for my efforts, I was richly rewarded. It was as if I'd entered another world. I've been told that this is my history, my civilization, but I don't recognize it. And as I gazed at these artifacts, I began to understand why. Marx believed that culture was downstream from economic conditions. In his view, a society's laws, political institutions, art, religion, and ideology are all shaped by the class hierarchies upon which they are built. This is why the symbolic world I found myself in seemed so foreign to me, because the social order which had existed to maintain had vanished. Feudalism demanded its own myths. Now that it was gone, all that was left was its gilded mask. But if each society constructed its own cultural veil, then which one covered my eyes?
I had dinner with a friend of mine who's a multi-billionaire, and he was just like, Alex, he's like, I just need more money.
And what class reality did that veil obscure? How could it be that in the richest city in the world, there were people sleeping in the subway? How could it be that as Los Angeles burned across the country, we continued to extract more and more oil, as if on autopilot? How could it be that a system could give us such shining symbols of freedom in the political realm while making us compete for scraps in our everyday lives? I had been blind this whole time, chasing political and cultural shadows, shadows cast by something else entirely. Suddenly, I knew what I had to do.
I'm here in Midtown Manhattan in front of a location you may recognize.
Police sources tell ABC News a man in Altoona, Pennsylvania is being held for questioning.
You might expect me to, you know, pop out here and act a fool, but I'm not going to do that. I'm going to take the high road this time. I truly wish we didn't live in a country where we killed people because it was expedient, but unfortunately we passed that point a long time ago. As you may be aware, every year 40,000 Americans die of preventable diseases. You might think that the healthcare system is broken, but actually it's working exactly as intended. Health insurance companies make billions of dollars in profit by denying care to people who need it. Thousands of families are plunged into massive medical debt. Every year, millions are sacrificed on the altar of the almighty dollar. Every day, the ruling class chooses violence. But because they have power, that violence has been rendered invisible. So rest in peace, Brian Thompson. I'll light a candle for the repose of your soul and a million more for all the victims of your industry.
I felt like I touched a live wire. That night, I met up with some of my followers at a hole in the wall on the Lower East Side, which I chose for no particular reason. As we talked late into the night, I finally understood the force which I felt when I first arrived in the city. The working class was beginning to awaken.
But I believe New Yorkers are hungry for a vision that puts their needs and aspirations at the very heart of government. And that is why I stand before you as a candidate for New York City mayor.
Solidarity is a rare emotion these days, but as I sat in that ill-lit bar, sipping on an overpriced cocktail, I felt it. These are my people. And while I still wasn't sure what exactly I wanted to produce for the challenge, I knew that whatever it was, it would be for them. I felt in these men and women the kernel of a new world struggling to be born. And if I reached out my hand, I could, almost. But just as soon as I'd seen it, it was gone. My brief peek behind the curtain had ended. It was time to go back to the Midwest.
Been feeling pretty discouraged these past couple days. I've seen a lot in the past 3 weeks, but I don't know. I just don't know if it means anything, you know? I mean, sure, I've learned a lot. I've seen a lot of stuff, but I feel like I'm back in the same place I was at the beginning of the month. Like, I feel like I understand the game now, but I'm no closer to changing it. The worst part is, I've been slacking on my reading pretty hard. I tried everything to get my mind off it. Sports gambling, regular gambling. I mean, what else is there for a guy to do? I tried everything. I'm not sure I can finish this challenge. And at this point, I'm not sure I even want to.
Just a week ago, I felt like I was on top of the world. Now, I was at rock bottom. So, I did what any true Midwesterner would do in a time of crisis. Go hang out in the middle of nowhere and call up a friend.
Hey, Greg, or Dreg, or J-Reg, or whatever. It's me, Harper. I've been feeling a bit down in the dumps lately, man. I'm trying to read all this theory so I can change the world, but it's hard to stay consistent. Sometimes it feels like the politics game is too big for me. Like the whole world's on fire, and all I have to put it out is a super soaker full of liberal tears. And on top of that, there's about to be a damn cheeto in the White House! When you get down in the dumps about the state of this crazy world, what do you tell yourself?
That sounds rough, Harper. That sounds really rough. I can tell you why your mission is meaningless.
Does that help? Have you tried cocaine? Have you done cocaine while reading the literature? I guarantee the reading is gonna feel really good. 75 milligrams of Vyvanse, Harper. I think that's probably the right number. I think that's probably the right amount of Vyvanse. I ideally do enough stimulants that it induces a psychotic break, Harper. But Harper, don't just deal with the regular socialist literature, okay? Learn about the UFOs, learn about the dolphins, learn about nuclear war and why it would be actually not be such a bad thing for a nuclear war to happen, because we could rebuild from the ashes and create a utopia.
I'm gonna kill Harper. Bob Iger. I'm gonna go for Bob Iger with my 3D printed gun. For me, I think the Disney movies, they got too woke, so I'm gonna go for Bob Iger. But I don't know if Bob Iger had a role to play in that. I don't know if he's even currently the CEO, but I got a vendetta. I got a vendetta against Bob Iger. You know, Harper, why stop at 1,000 pages of socialist literature? Why not do 5,000? Why not do 10,000? You should spend the rest of your life reading socialist literature instead of doing stuff in the real world. Maybe write 10,000 pages of socialist literature. Maybe that'll be the straw that breaks the camel's back, Harper.
Oh, you were looking for something inspiring. I don't really know how to do that.
Dreg is a hard man to read, but I've been watching his videos for a few months now, so. You know, we go way back. And through the parasocial magic of the internet, I understood him well enough to see the message beneath his carefully layered irony. There was a simple reason why I lacked motivation to read, why my revelation on the East Coast had seemed like a flash in the pan, why this whole challenge was meaningless in the first place. I lacked purpose. I had no project to apply my knowledge to, and no community to apply it with. My head was full of theory and grand visions, but I was neglecting the work that was right in front of me. It was time to mobilize. After all, there was about to be a dang cheeto in the White House.
It's January 20th. Donald Trump is being inaugurated as we speak. I got word that there's some people in front of City Hall, so we're gonna go check that out and see what's going on.
We produce more than enough to feed and house and care for every person on the planet. Capitalism prevents those resources from reaching the people who need it. Capitalism.
The gathering was pretty small, but considering how bitterly cold it was, I was still inspiring to see how many people came out. Afterwards, some of us went to lunch to discuss a new proposal being voted on at that night's meeting.
Okay, that was a great conversation. So here's what we're working on. We are going to erase $1.5 million worth of medical debt. I know that sounds like a lot, and it is. Thankfully, we don't have to raise $1.5 million to erase $1.5 million worth of debt. We just need to raise enough to buy up the debt and then destroy it, which is going to cost about $15,000. It's not sexy. It's not revolutionary. I mean, the private insurance industry should not even exist in the first place. But at least it's something, you know? I mean, if you got a letter in the mail saying your medical debt was paid off by the Democratic Socialists of America, you might think twice about this whole socialism thing. Really, to me, this campaign represents a chance to communicate to the people who have been most directly screwed over by this broken system that we don't have to put up with this. We don't have to put up with this. This is not a charity fundraiser. It's an invitation to fight back against the pharmaceutical and insurance industry that's bleeding us dry for profit. So yeah, I'm excited. I can't wait to get to work on this. I feel good. Now that I have like a mission to work on, I am actually finding myself super motivated to read. And I just want to like see how far I can push this thing. I just want to see how effective I can become. And that sort of intrinsic motivation is an awesome feeling. Oh yeah, one more thing. You remember how at the beginning of this challenge, I said that I needed to create something, like I needed to make something to showcase what I learned? Well, I know what I want to make now, but the clock is ticking. I only have about a week left to complete this challenge, so game on. All right, so it is day 30, and I am done with this challenge. I mean, sure, you know, I didn't read all the footnotes, but what's done is done, all right? 1,000 pages. I feel accomplished. I feel learned. But most importantly, I feel rich. Thank God I'm off the hook for all that money.
Israeli Defense Force.
Oops, my hand slipped. So what did this challenge teach me? And more importantly, what did I create to share those lessons with you? If there's one thing I've learned in the past month, it's that self-education is not easy. I had a super busy January, and I'm convinced that I would not have been able to make the time to read consistently if I didn't have a community to keep me accountable. The problem is, finding that community, online and offline, is really hard. When I was just starting out, I wished there was a place I could go to get the resources I needed to step into the real world and organize with confidence, but there wasn't. That's why I created Vanguard. Vanguard is an all-in-one platform for new leftists who are ready to start their political journey. It's not just another internet forum designed for endless debating and drama rehashing. There's no algorithm, no follower count, and no ads. Vanguard is designed to empower you to get off the internet and start making an impact in your community as soon as possible by connecting you to everyone else watching this video. When you become a Vanguard member, you're no longer just an atomized individual passively consuming content. You're part of this growing movement of leftists who are taking action in the real world. Vanguard is a place for all of us to learn, ask questions, share our wins and losses, connect, and strategize. It's also totally free to use. I want everyone to have access to this tool. But if you're ready for the next level, you can apply to Vanguard Academy. Vanguard Academy is an exclusive mentorship program within Vanguard that's specifically designed to help the next generation of organizers and leaders develop their skills. If you want access to new monthly courses which break down theory in depth, plus a private forum to connect with other members, plus weekly reading groups and strategy calls, then consider applying for Vanguard Academy. Also, by joining Vanguard Academy, you support my work and allow me to stay independent of corporate sponsors. So it's a win-win. Either way, if you want to learn and grow alongside a dedicated community that shares your goals, then Vanguard is the place for you. Click the first link in the description to become a Vanguard member today. I hope to see you there. A better world is possible.